Who or what is an individual? An individual is an image. The reason is that God is all in all. Therefore, there is no such thing as an individual that is independent or sovereign from its source. All existence is an image of a set of principles which includes and are defined as the synonymous terms for the three-letter word G-O-D. And what does God consist of? God consists of incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. No matter what the name is of the individual, it could be any name that exists. They are all the same in this respect, and that is that they are an image of their source. There's only one real source, so if it's a real image, then it is an image of God and is characterized by the seven synonymous terms, which as a general summary, the highlighted functions being the following. Mind represents intelligence, wisdom, knowing, ever-presence, creative activity, all action, all capacity, facility, functionality, and in each case, everything and only is within each individual quality. Intelligence, therefore, of mind, the quality of mind, represents the only intelligence that exists and all intelligence that exists. So there is no intelligence outside of the intelligence of mind. There is no wisdom outside the wisdom of mind. There is no knowing outside the knowing of mind, which means that it's a waste of time to be trying to think. Because instead of trying to think as an individual, independent, sovereign brain, one would be much better served by figuring out how to get rid of relying on a so-called glob of so-called matter. The capacity of incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind is infinite. In fact, these four words that were just mentioned, incorporeal, means that it's not in a brain. Divine means that it is not material. Supreme means that there is nothing that is at a higher level. In fact, not only that, it is the only level. And infinite means that there are no limitations whatsoever. And of course, this applies to time and space. If God is ever present, which God is, and again, God is only a three-letter word that represents these qualities, but it's easy to refer to that three-letter word instead of naming off all of the different qualities every time you want to refer to it. So God is the only presence that exists. Mary Baker Eddy states that God is omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient, and omniaction. omniscience states that the only science is God. In other words, there is no so-called material science. Science means that it is factual and it can be proven by anyone who complies with the rules. There is no science that is factual except for the science of God, because that covers all existence. So for someone to try to define some little part of it and do all this research only to find out that sometime later that it was all wrong. Every so-called material science has been proven to be incorrect. The one that is most correct, I believe, is the quantum science. It's been referred to as quantum physics, quantum mechanics. But basically, that was breaking down the atom to find out what is the composition and what is the smallest element that it can be broken down into. And it was determined finally that once it was broken down into its very smallest element, that the only thing left was consciousness. This may not be the latest research on this, because it seems that their idea of consciousness was based on the observer. In other words, the consciousness of the observer is the determinant of what is being seen. That obviously is a relative view and not an absolute one. But in facts, we're looking for absolute. An absolute fact is invariable. In math, a 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9 must be the same no matter whom is the observer. In music, an A, B, C, D, E, F, and G must be the same no matter whom is the observer or the practitioner that is utilizing those notes. And in the former, of course, the mathematician that is utilizing those numbers for making a calculation. And in music, in making a composition. The harmony of the music and the accuracy of the mathematics must be the same no matter who is applying the science. Who is utilizing the absolute element in order to come to a manifestation of their work. In music, it's a beautiful composition. In mathematics, it's an accurate calculation that is coming up with a mathematical conclusion that could be applied to building a bridge or building a building or whatever. If we're going to be utilizing intelligence, then we have to make sure that we understand that intelligence does not change. The result cannot change. The same with wisdom and the same with knowing. So if we think we have forgotten something that is important, if it's really important, then it's something of spiritual significance. And if it's of spiritual significance, then it is in the knowing of incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind. One could only forget something that is spiritually significant if they are being enticed to get away from relying on the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, which is always all-knowing. So the all-knowing has the facts and can be converted to the relative need if one yields to that one and only real mind. No matter who the individual is, that avenue is available. And we must individually know that that avenue is available for us and available for anyone that is in our thought. But we must let the mind, the infinite mind, be the one in operation and not some supposed piece of matter called a brain. Because that's going to be limited. Even though it's been said that that is capable of what a powerful computer would be able to do, it's still very, very inferior to the infinite mind. Because it is supreme. The infinite mind is supreme. Nothing above that level. And the only thing that exists below that level would be the degree to which one is reflecting the one supreme mind. And again, that is not in the mind. That is not in the image. It's in the reflection of the source. So every individual has that one source, which is infallible. Mind being all capacity, all facility, all functionality, means that there cannot be anything that is in conflict with that. In other words, there cannot be any image of God which is absent of absolutely perfect functioning, perfect facility. The capacity is without limit. The substance of all is spirit, and spirit, in order to be substantial, of course, that's what substance is. It has to be substantial. And in fact, it's more than substantial. Real substance has to be the only substance and the infinite and incorporeal divine supreme substance. That means that it has to be of spirit, not so-called matter. There can be no material substance that is flawless, that is without limits. Since spirit is the only substance, that is the substance of every individual in existence. Which means that not a single individual can be subject to a so-called matter base and its material limitations. In other words, there can't be any sickness, there can't be any sin, there can't be any death. There can't be any disease. there can't be any discord of any kind whatsoever. Because that is only an appearance of what is an attribute. It's an attribute of matter. And matter's so-called parent, which is mortal mind. But there is no mortal mind in reality, because mind is immortal. The one and only incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind is immortal, because it's of the substance of spirit. A so-called mortal mind is of the substance of misunderstanding, misapprehension, lack of perception. It's an absence of spiritual hearing, seeing, feeling, tasting, smelling. There are five real senses, and they are the senses of soul, and soul is of the substance of spirit, as is everything, and therefore the senses of soul are spiritual senses. So-called matter-based senses or material senses are of naught. N-A-U-G-H-T. Nothing. They're an absence of something. They're an absence of reality. There need be no fear about one's future. And that, of course, includes anyone else that is in one's thoughts. There need to be no fear about one's present situation. Remembering that the only thing any individual is a reflection of the one and only incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite God. If that's our source, which it is, then we as an image have to be having the same qualities that does God, except for quantity. God is the only infinite. There is one principle, and that's divine. It's incorporeal, supreme, and infinite. It's not matter. It's not variable. It's not relative. It's absolute. And the only thing that could be relative about it is if we are utilizing that divine principle for a way to glorify God in a daily activity, then it seems like that could be a relative principle, in that it is the divine incorporeal absolute principle being applied to a human activity. But the more we yield to the one and only divine principle, the more we get to that point where the human touches the divine. And that's, of course, where Jesus was. In fact, Mary Baker Eddy states that the magnitude of Jesus' humanity is what enabled his divinity. That's a paraphrase. So, as we focus on the divine, the incorporeal, supreme, and infinite, the all-harmonious, then we let go of the thousands of years of misapprehension of what man really is. A habit which was formed based on lies, believing the Adam dream, which is stated in Genesis chapter 2. But the more one focuses on the real record of creation, the true record of creation, which is in Genesis chapter 1 through the first three verses of chapter 2, the more the focus is on those statements, which, keeping in mind, it is the first part of the Bible, even though Genesis 2 was written previous to Genesis 1. The truth is Genesis 1. Divine principle is always harmonious. Its operation is always complete. Mary Baker Eddy, who reflected the brilliance of incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, and gave us the beautiful discovery of Christian Science. And I say discovery because Christian Science has always existed, because that means the science of the Christ. Christ is not a man. Christ could better be referred to as the consciousness of God, reflecting the brilliance of mind. Mary Baker Eddy not only discovered and brought to written form the principles of Christian Science, but also established it. So she was the founder and the leader. So she established this worldwide connection of truth seekers, all seeking the facts about what life is. What is the world all about? What is God? Who is God? Who or what is man? What is the relationship between God and man? Is there anything we can count on absolutely as a principle to guide us in experiencing a better life? Mary Baker Eddy answered all these questions, and we must realize that it does not just apply to an individual, but it applies to every individual. Whomever is in our thought benefits directly when our thought is focused on the truth about who or what God is, who or what man is, and the relationship between them. When one has an improved understanding about this, then the benefits begin to compound. One plus one no longer equals only two, but it equals two plus. In other words, the understanding is to a level where the benefits can't be measured by numbers. It's like when one listens to a beautiful composition. It can't be described with words because it is beyond a so-called material word description. It possibly can come closer to being properly described by spiritual words, which are the capitalized terms for God, which means that we're really talking about God. We're not talking about music. We're talking about something that is more supreme than just the word music. It's like a variety of notes together are described as a tone, like a chord. But then you could be talking about various octaves, and you could be talking about various instruments playing those, so each type of instrument has a different sound, and each performer has a different sound, depending on their level of understanding of how to master that instrument and their practice and refinement. It's like one of the best pianists in the world said, "How did you accomplish such a level of perfection?" He said, "I just let the music play me. I get out of the way. I let the music play me." So it's not the me that you are hearing, it is the music that is performing through my hands. It's like the men that were working on the task of breaking down the atom. They had to get self out of the way. They had to keep seeking the truth until they realized that it was consciousness. And in quantum mechanics, they describe it as motion or vibration that is taking place at such a high level of oscillation that it looks like we're seeing something that is opaque, when in fact we're seeing something that is invisible. Electricity is invisible, for example. We see the results of it, but we can't see it. We see the manifestation of it. Mary Baker Eddy describes electricity as the most ethereal form, but yet it is still considered matter, which means that it's not reality, it's not absolute. Sound travels at a high speed. Light travels at a speed far in excess of the speed of sound. But the infinite cannot even be measured because it's already omnipresent. There's no traveling to take place. It is already everywhere. Nothing can describe where it is not. It cannot be described as being absent because it's omnipresent. When one thinks of another one, and it better be in a spiritual manner, that affects the other person, the other individual, and reflects out into the atmosphere of thought. Whatever one is occupying their thought with it doesn't matter what the name is of the individual is an image of the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle. Also of life, truth, and love, which hasn't been discussed. Mary Baker Eddy uses the term love, as noted previously, with principle. The terms used together of divine principle love seems to imply that in order for principle to work smoothly, it needs to have the flavor of love. I believe that she is telling us that love is required with everything. It's like the commercial for one of the fast food restaurants where the grandmother is going in there and ordering an item, supposed to be a hamburger sandwich, and she lifts up the top of the bun, looking at what is there, and she says, "But where's the beef?" And of course, that ended up being the theme of the fast food chain. Well, we have to make sure the love is in there, no matter what we're talking about. Mathematics and music, neither one are any good unless you have the love in there. And what is the love? The love is the nurturing. So if you're talking about mathematics, it's abiding by the principle of mathematics. And of course, there's mathematics involved in music. So you have to abide by those laws of music, which are based on mathematics. You can't use a note that is out of place and get a harmonious manifestation of a beautiful composition. The result will be something with discord. And in mathematics, it'll be the incorrect answer. Life and truth both require nurturing. In other words, we have to open our individual thought to the principle that's involved, the rules that are involved, the attributes, the qualities, and we have to be letting them guide us. Qualities of life include being eternal, There can't be any variance from life. In other words, if one is acting very slowly or sleepy or permitting oneself to be deflected, deluded, stopped, or even reversed, then that's not life. Of course, if they permit it to be stopped, then that's death. Being reversed means that you're putting life into evil, which of course is only a concept because evil is not real. But one is wasting their time if they're devoting any thought, speech, or action to something that's unlike God. So life must be vivacious. In fact, it is living the qualities of God. What are we expressing in our life? Are we expressing intelligence and wisdom and knowing of mind? Are we expressing the spiritual nature of real substance? Are we expressing the spiritual qualities of soul? Spiritual seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. Are we focusing on the bad smell or the bad feeling? Are we ruminating? Rehearsing something that is past, that was an unfavorable event that seemed to be? Which, of course, with intelligence would revert that, turn that sucker around, and make it something to learn from. It wouldn't be a hazard. It would be a reminder to get reoriented. Reoriented to the truth. Life means that we must be focusing on our source. And we must know that that is the case for anyone in our thought. We must be thinking of them as expressing that, not something that is what we want to criticize. Obviously, our real duty individually is to be taking care of our own thoughts, not someone else's. But if an individual comes to thought, we have to think correctly about that individual. That is our duty, to make sure that our thought is wholesome and not anything less. Our duty is to guard our own thought. Mary Baker Eddy refers to this where she says, we must bar our door as we would against thieves and murderers. Our door of thought controls what gets into our thoughts. What are we going to let in? If we're going to watch a movie that shows violence, then we're letting that in our thought. And that tends to dilute the harmony. The only reason we would ever want to observe violence is if it is by some chance that was not planned and where we happen to learn of it through noticing a headline or listening to something by not being planned to do. Not planning to listen to violence, but you hear something that is immediately interpreted as being violence. You could hear a gunshot. You could hear two cars crashing or whatever. Whatever the noise is, if it is a noise instead of a beautiful sound, then it is something that was not planned and should then be treated by being recognized that the only sound there can be is one of harmony. And there cannot be any reality to something that is discordant. There can't be any personal harm, individual harm, come to anything, whether it's a plant, an animal, a human. Because in reality, everything is divine. Everything is beautiful and perfect. And that's how we must view it. So we must reverse the thought of a sound that is not beautiful and harmonious, realizing that it cannot have any power. It is not real. It wasn't created by the one and only Creator. Mary Baker Eddy, in one of her Bible lesson topics, is God, the only cause and creator. And she interprets the first few words of chapter 1 of Genesis, where it says, in the beginning, she interprets that to mean in the only. So there's not a beginning to truth. There's not a beginning to facts. It has always been. It's always been. Truth is consciousness. That includes motive. Actions really stem from consciousness. If it is a spiritual action, then it stems from the consciousness of God. The Christ consciousness, the perfect consciousness, the consciousness of the substance of spirit. Therefore, there is no individual that is excluded from this consciousness, for it is ever present. And one must know that not only our consciousness is derived as a reflection of God's consciousness, but so is the consciousness of all existence. The consciousness that is observing the research to break down the atom cannot be confined to an individual consciousness, because they're looking for the truth. And the only consciousness that looks for the truth is the Christ consciousness. Human consciousness doesn't know anything about truth. It's only as we give up the belief of self-will that we're able to see the will of God. The phrase that it is the principle of the thing as a reason to pursue something, we must be on our guard to make sure that it's the divine principle and that we are pursuing the divine will and not self-will. It's very easy to be tricked into doing. the primary feature of a so-called mortal mind is to look like the divine mind. In other words, trickery, facade, cloning. They attempt to clone truth, but they're using a matter base. They or it, the suggestion, probably a better way to refer to it. Love is the final term for God in the days of creation order. And although love must permeate all of the other qualities, it is considered a totally separate quality with its own unique characteristics. The same with mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth. They all have unique characteristics. They are synonymous terms, but synonymous doesn't mean same. It means similar. In other words, it has similar characteristics in some respects, but uniqueness in others. But the beauty is that everything is like a beautiful orchestra, a composition. It all works together. It is one grand network of loveliness. So we must focus on, number one, where is our thought? Are we expressing love in our actions? As stated previously, Mary Baker Eddy stated that the magnitude of Jesus' humanity enabled his divinity. So are we being loving and kind and generous and tender and understanding and tolerant and patient and all the other words that could describe what love is on a human level? Are we being that with our human contacts? With everyone we know? Are we utilizing those terms to remind us of how to treat an event? An event could be much more successful if those kind of ingredients were a part of it. A business. If you're that way with your customers, is there any question what the result would be? How about friends? Any relationship? How about an enemy? Mary Baker Eddy defines an enemy as something that we are perceiving as an enemy, not a real enemy. It's all an individual thought that makes it a so-called enemy. What do you think love does to hate? It neutralizes it and reverses it. Hate is like going backwards when you're driving without looking. Looking forward and driving backwards. And I don't mean looking into a rear view mirror that is in front of you. I'm talking about looking forward but going backwards. You can't tell where you're going. It's a loose cannon. And that's exactly what hate is. That's exactly what any quality is. It's not really a quality, it's an absence of quality. But that's exactly what any action is that is unlike a God action. We're going backwards and we can't see where we're going. The nurturing that was mentioned previously has to be nurturing all of these attributes of love on a human level. That picture of Christ Jesus knocking on a door, and you might think that that is knocking on the door of consciousness. You can't even get that door. You can't even get to the door to knock on it or to open it for the Christ to come in unless one is nurturing all of these human qualities of love. And I say human qualities, they're not the depraved level of humanity. They are the one that is seeking a higher level, whether consciously or unconsciously, voluntarily or involuntarily. It's like the intuition of survival in humanity. It's innate. An animal. They're after survival. Probably everything that has life, insects, birds, whatever. It's a built-in characteristic. Birds fly south where it's warm. When winter is coming on and they're located in the north, they fly south to be in the southern climate and away from the ice and cold of where they were previously making their home. So is one willing to do that? To get their thought somewhere else in order to improve their existence? In fact, it's an improvement that is a dimension that is far beyond anything that can be done humanly. We have to let go of the human shackles. We have to let ourselves out of the prison that is limiting us to human possibilities and open the divine possibilities. We have to be able to not only knock on that door, but open it and approach going through it. The magnitude of the humanity of Jesus enabled his divinity. Is the magnitude of our humanity individually seeking that higher level, giving up the perceived limitations that is love at work. And love is not only the plan and design of itself, but the plan and design of all existence. That's what life is all about. Nurturing the qualities of love. Building up so that we can get to the door of the Christ consciousness to open it so that we can drain Open the drain plug at the bottom of the pit and let all the swamp get out. Let the light, the sun, the warm, beautiful sunshine of truth, of mind and spirit and life, soul, principle, let it all shine and drain, dry up, get rid of the swampy thoughts of a so-called mortal mind. The thing that everyone expects us to be strapped to when we go through a process of so-called material birth, which is really death. In fact, it's termed to be the first death. That's what we need to expel from consciousness. We need to adopt, accept, practice, demonstrate. We need to translate everything from what it appears to be to the real, true spiritual nature, no matter whether we're talking about ourselves or another individual, or thinking of, thoughts about. Our entire being must be cultivating, nurturing the beauty that is the truth about all existence. That is a force like a river that never runs out of water, that will move anything in its way, whether it is a granite, that the water will erode, you know, passing over it over time. It takes a rough piece of granite and smooths it out. Finally, it ends up being sediments on the bottom of the river. The sand that is in such small size that you have to have special equipment to measure it. Nothing can prevent the truth from doing its work. It doesn't give up. It never quits. Never walks away. It is an immovable, irresistible force of mind. It's the only force, it's the only action, it's the only creative activity, mind, that works with truth, which is errorless and constant, like a river without limitation. That's what we're fighting with if we are supporting an ungodlike thought, which of course converts to an ungodlike action, an ungodlike speech. And the same thing as if we are giving way to the truth. It can't be defeated. But if we're supporting something ungodlike, it not only will be defeated, but it gives us the opportunity to waken up from that and switch sides. Flip from the unreal to the real. Wake up like Paul did when he was Saul, became Paul. Like some of Jesus' followers, instead of being fishers of the fish in the sea, they were fishers of men. God is all there is. And that applies to every individual, no matter what their name is. And if we're holding that individual in thought, this benefit passes to them. But of course, our real duty is to take care of our own thought. And like Mary Baker Eddy, she prayed for the world. I believe this is the kind of thing that she probably was thinking about. That is our duty. That is how we can glorify God. God can be glorified by giving attention to God. Looking at God as being the only solution. That's where we need to go first. Not wait till last when we've tried everything else. Go there first. Save a lot of time and effort. Start the compounding for good in our own experience faster, earlier. And stick to the truth. Stick on the path. Don't vary. That way, one can compound good for themselves, which will be a benefit to everyone whom their thought rests upon. It cannot fail, because it is God at work. Amen.